Coming up next on The Voice of Alabama Politics, trouble at the Cannabis Commission. Also, Auburn Board of Trustees names its first Black president. And are book burnings coming to Alabama?
See, it's no good, Montag. We've all got to be alike. The only way to be happy is for everyone to be made equal. So, we must burn the books, Montag.
I think we're headed to Weimar. All this and much, much more coming up next on The V. Welcome to The Voice of Alabama Politics, where we tackle the tough issues so you have the hard facts. I'm your host, Bill Britt, and as always, I'm joined by Susan Britt, research guru extraordinaire, and Josh Boone, columnist and investigative reporter at APR. Welcome.
Hi, guys.
Hey, y'all.
A new report came out that some 900 books have been banned in the United States in 2002 to this point in 2020, from 2022 to 2023, 900. It sounds like we're in Fahrenheit 451 territory where they burn all the books, and because they want us all to be the same. They don't want us to learn anything, Josh.
Yeah, it's you've actually seen their photos of book burnings that were held at some point.
They have little swastikas on them. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's... Have y'all not watched the movies? The book banners are never the good guys. You know, it's never the way that works out. And listen, I get on some level, you know, parents wanting to be, you know, wanting to make sure that the things that their kids are picking up in school, the things that they're reading are age appropriate. And, you know, but how many times have we heard about parental choice on things and, you know, and parental involvement and making sure that kids are, you know, your kids are learning what you want them to learn. And, you know, that sort of stuff starts kind of at the house, and the availability of books should be something that's there for everyone. And then you guide your children on what's going on. Yes, there are guidelines that schools follow and the school boards follow and the teachers follow. And you can be a part of those as well. There's a whole process. It's called the governing of public schools. There's a whole process you can be a part of with this.
Susan, it's also happening in public libraries up in Prattville. There's an ongoing controversy there where a group has gotten together and tried to ban books. Recently, APR reporter Jacob Holmes spoke with Dr. Nancy Pack, who is basically the state librarian. She's the head person. And she referred him to a book called The Rabbit's Wedding.
Yes, she did. And it was a book where a black rabbit and a white rabbit got married. And this, I think, was in 1958, I believe. And because people, you know, interracial marriage, we can't have that in a book. And I believe at the time it may have even still been illegal. So they, you know, banned that book. Well, it seems like what we're doing is going right back to this. In fact, you know, Scott, that Stadthagen is talking about actually bringing legislation next session. What exactly is that legislation going to be? Who's going to be the one that picks and chooses these books for children? You know, this has just gotten, you know, I'm hearing goose stepping outside right now.
Josh, 70 years ago, a picture book for kids, 3 to 7, 4 to 7, showed a black rabbit and a white rabbit, and they interpreted it as interracial marriage, which was illegal in Alabama at that time.
Honestly, it's, you know, for all of the screaming about indoctrinating kids and, you know, forcing your liberal agendas on kids, this is the actual forcing of an agenda on children. When you take away the opportunity for them to learn about the differences among them, you know, their differences, the things that they've spotted within themselves that are different than maybe what their parents expect or what other people expect out of them, or the differences among their peers, that's indoctrinating your kids. You know, that's forcing them down a pathway where they're not learning about the things that happen in life and things that make them better friends and you know, and better classmates and better people.
Well, and the thing that is troubling to me is that they are pushing primarily a religious agenda yes. in a country that has a pluralistic society. Of the some almost 1,000 books banned in the last year or so, many of them had been over LGBTQ. Mm-hmm. Many have been about race. I mean, they have banned books about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Yeah. They had banned 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea by Jules Verne. They banned, you know, they banned a book about Manet, the artist, mm-hmm. and his paintings. I mean, mm-hmm. it's just ridiculous. And it is really part of a social agenda by the far right wing of the Republican Party.
Oh, absolutely it is. I mean, there's no yes. doubt about that. That's exactly what they're trying to do. And because when these books are available and when kids learn true stories about what's happened in the past, it humanizes these people that sometimes they've been taught to vilify. Yeah. And we can't have that. We can't have you understanding what happened in the black community, what happened, you know, with transgender people, how it's harmful to them and what their real life experiences have been like, because it humanizes them in your eyes at that point, and they can no longer use those sort of wedge issues to get in and steal votes from people.
Well, and again, it's taking away choice. They love to take away people's choice, no matter what kind of choice that is. This should be a parental choice. These things should be available to all the kids if the parents want to take them down that path, not somebody else's path.
Libraries should be a repository of knowledge available to everyone and all books. You know, the state of Indiana just passed a law that you can't ban books in public libraries. How about that?
That's never happened.
Hey, just a real quick second. Governor Kay Ivey is going to call a special session for July, the week of July 17th, to get these congressional maps straightened out. Josh, got about a minute here. What do you think?
It became necessary because of the Supreme Court ruling that ruled our 2020 maps were discriminatory, and we have to draw in a second district where black voters make up a majority or something very close to it. I believe that was the exact words of the court. And you know it, that we're going to have to redraw them, so they're going to have a week or so. And if we don't do a fair job or don't get them done by a July 21st deadline imposed by the federal mm-hmm. courts. They're going to appoint a special master to do it for us.
Well, the question will be then, and I think quickly, can the Republicans be competitive in those districts? And they yeah. think they can be. If all the districts were drawn fairly, everybody could be competitive in every district, but we don't get that. We get
no.
the gerrymandering and the race-based and the, you know, guys in the guise of Republican or Democrat, right?
Right. That's yep. all we get.
Well, we're going to leave it right there. You're watching The V, the voice of Alabama politics. We'll be right back.
When I first started off, it was all about being an entrepreneur. Very quickly, it went into all the environmental impact that we're having on our world right now. We needed a technology that could do something with all the plastics that are harder to recycle. We innovated and created a technology, advanced recycling.
My personal biggest pet peeve is kids who are not properly restrained, whether that be in a booster seat, a car seat, or even a simple seatbelt. Kids, they become projectiles, and it's terrifying.
It absolutely breaks my heart to know that something so innocent could be punished so severely.
Your children rely on you to be that person that says, no, you need to put your seatbelt on.
Today, Montgomery is a safer city. It's time to shift the narrative and take control of our future. We're reopening community centers, remediating blight, and revitalizing neighborhoods across the city. And we're unleashing new opportunities. Over the past year, companies have invested a record-setting $2 billion in Montgomery and created 2,000 jobs. This is a new Montgomery. And together, we're reimagining the possibilities.
Welcome back to The V, the voice of Alabama politics. I mean, the Medical Cannabis Commission has been nothing but a hot mess. I mean, talk about a dumpster fire full of marijuana. It's been just that, Josh. I mean, they issued licenses, and it was supposed to all go hunky-dory, and then they came back and said, oh, we've got to pause the licensing, distributed the license, because there's potential inaccuracies in the whole process of how they scored who should get a license.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that meant that somebody took a look at the awarding of the licenses and thought, we about to get sued. And, you know, and successfully sued, probably. It, man, I feel bad, I guess, for John McMillan, who's running this commission. You know, I think he's gotten some bad advice and some bad help on a lot of things. But you're right. This has been a dumpster fire. And you listen, a dumpster fire full of marijuana would be an improvement over this. You know, at least you don't feel better about it. But listen, it has been a mess from the start, from the way that they went about, accepting the application process. You know, it has been an absolute train wreck of a show. And, you know, they've given different advice to different people. They've given different options to different people. They've allowed certain people to submit applications that were a much more full application than other people that were limited to 10 megabytes and never got an excuse out of that. I mean, it's just been an absolute mess, man. And I think they're going to have to hit a reset button and just start over.
I mean, Susan, kind of break that down for us. Okay, so let's say I'm a company that is going to grow, process, and distribute medical marijuana in Alabama. And I want to send a file that says, here's my schematics, here's my building, here's my fields, here's my trucks, and all that stuff. I got to put that in a document and upload it into 10 megabytes.
Right. You're going to take schematics, you're going to take drawings with your images, you're going to take spreadsheets, which every, you know, any proposal has numerous spreadsheets in it. You're going to take the company's history, you're going to take the company's proposals, you're going to take all of that, put it in one document, and upload it to a 10 meg portal. 10 meg portal. Now, what they're doing in Texas is 500 meg. But as Josh said, the real problem there was they told some of them, oh, that's okay, you can give it to us on a thumb drive, you can print it out. Problem is, they didn't tell everyone that. Yeah. They went ahead and got the applications in both ways and then sent it to graduate students. I think it's at
University of South Alabama.
And used graduate students to do the scoring system. Okay, this is not really a good way of doing this.
Well,
that's just one of the problems they've got.
You know, and Josh, you can appreciate this. Both you and I have been investigative reporters throughout our career. I looked at one company, they operate in 13 different states across the country. They are based in Chicago, Illinois. They were awarded an integrated license, which means they grow, process, and distribute.
Transport.
Mm-hmm. Transport, and 5 dispensaries. So they have everything. They've got the whole Megillah. But when you look at them back in... there was a report in the Financial News for marijuana growers where they owed more to the IRS than they had cash on hand.
Right.
And it seemed like, according to what I read, the CEO said, that was a strategy. Yeah. They wouldn't pay the IRS the $150 million they owed them, so that was because it was cheaper to be in the arrears than to borrow money.
Yeah.
As a business model.
They got the number one license.
Yeah, the penalties were less than the cost of borrowing the money that they were just withholding.
Yeah,
and I mean, I guess that's a fair strategy. I assume that happens in business from time to time.
Yeah,
You know, it underscores a point though. We're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars potentially here for these companies, and that's what we're dealing with out of this is hundreds of millions of dollars, and we've got a we can't get the portal right to send the applications in. You know, I mean that's the it's such when you start talking about it and you hear these problems that these people encounter. It's so hokey, man. It's so backwoods kind of just, you know, good old boy nonsense that's going on here. And you're just like, what? You keep 10 megabytes? What are we talking about? You know, we're in a terabyte world here.
They were told and told and told, and they never corrected it. Open up, you know, open it up from 10 meg to 500 meg. It's not that complicated. You could probably get a 10-year-old to do
it. Well, it's like that your iPhone has more storage space than what they were allowing.
A bunch more storage space. Yeah. So it's a 256-gigabyte phone, you know.
You know, I mean, it does put into question who exactly was running the website back there. I mean, but I hear there's a lot more problems, and lawsuits are imminent. To straighten this out.
We've heard of at least several.
Yeah. All right. Josh, is Ernest T, or who would used to say surprise?
Gomer.
Gomer used to say that. DNC is investigating Alabama Democrats over their new change of bylaws.
Again.
Shocking, right?
What? That's hard to believe, given that the DNC were responsible for the other bylaws. You know, this was not a surprise. The 2019 bylaws that ushered in kind of a regime change at the top of the Alabama Democratic Party were kind of, I won't say co-authored, but they were encouraged by the DNC. There was a whole long drawn out process of investigations at that point in 2019 that led to those bylaws that proved the previous bylaws that they had were discriminatory towards a lot of minority groups other than black people in the party. And so those bylaws in 2019 established some other caucuses that would fit into the minority groups there, the LGBTQ+, Youth Caucus, Hispanics, Native Americans. There were a number of different caucuses that came in that were given equal voting power within the party. And, you know, ever since then, the Alabama Democratic Conference, which is the black caucus of the party, led by Joe Reed, have been screaming that this has illegally diluted the black vote. The proponents of those 2019 bylaws would tell you that it did not dilute the black vote, that it actually increased the black vote. It just didn't do so within the confines of the Alabama Democratic Conference. It did so within the youth, the LGBTQ folks, and all those, and they are not necessarily loyal to Joe Reed and that faction of people. And so now, fast forward to Joe Reed gets his handpicked guy, Randy Kelly, back in charge. And the first item of business is to replace those bylaws that make sure Joe Reed's no longer in. Gives him a hard time remaining in control and power. And they do away with the Youth Caucus, the LGBTQ plus caucus, and some of those. And the DNC said, wait, hold up just a minute. We got a problem.
Well, as Will Rogers used to say, I'm a Democrat. I'm not a member of any organized political party. So there you go. I think that's it. All right. You're watching The V, the voice of Alabama politics. We'll be right back.
Throughout my career, I've seen many crashes, and a lot of the fatalities are from people who haven't worn their seatbelt.
Cars have rolled over multiple times.
I've had people end up in lakes, ravines. I've been looking for people in the woods for a couple hours before.
Usually just about every bone in their body is broken, their organs have ruptured, and typically they die.
You want to save a life? Just simply click a button and put the seatbelt on.
Seatbelts really do save lives.
My dog Jupiter is frightened when I climb too high, the owl said.
Check for monsters, Daddy.
I did, honey. There are no monsters. You're perfectly safe.
Protect yourself and those you love. Vaccinate now.
Welcome back to The V, the voice of Alabama politics. This past week, a federal judge in Arkansas permanently struck down that state's law that banned affirmative care for transgender youth. He said it was discriminatory against transgender people. It violated the constitutional rights of doctors and a lot more. That case is very similar to the case that will be heard here in the 11th Circuit very soon. Well, not soon, but it will reflect on the state law here in Alabama, what it said. Across the country, we're seeing these laws being struck down, not by Democrat judge. I mean, they're just both Democratic and Republican appointed judges are striking these laws down because they find them discriminatory and unconstitutional.
Yeah, well, U.S. District Judge Lyles Burke, who is a Trump appointee, has actually blocked that law, right, the Alabama law right now, until they can get to trial, you know, so that they can go ahead and get care until this can actually be heard.
I don't think they're hearing this until 2024, sometime in 2024. But Josh, I think this portends of what's to come.
This Arkansas ruling. Well, you know, and the reason why you're having this deal, you know, I think a lot of people looked at it and thought, well, these Trump-appointed judges or, you know, whatever are going to do this or that. The problem is, as we found out in the Alabama case and in the Arkansas case as well, is that the guiding principles behind these lawsuits are very, very thin. They have really no case to do this, because very quickly when they get into court and they talk to the doctors and to the kids that are being treated, they learn that of the multitude of steps and processes that they undergo in order to get these treatments, in order to and how they monitor the treatments and how the doctors care for these children, how the parents are caring for these children, and the dire straits that a lot of these kids were in, you know, with threats of suicide and unhappiness and depression. And all of it is very, very real, and it's a real world thing, and it's no longer this pandering, you know, issue of we must protect the children. That gets talked about in the halls of state houses, and it becomes a real life situation in that courtroom where a judge then has to look these people in the eyes and say, this is not right. What we're taking here, what's going on here is a medical process, and we're hearing from licensed individuals that know what the hell they're doing, and you've got a quack up from Australia who's never treated anybody, and so we can't do this.
One of the other things that judge said in Arkansas was that the wording was wrong in saying the care was experimental or carelessly prescribed.
Yeah.
He pointed that out to support your point.
And the thing is, we cover politics. This is political. It is a device to gin up the base of the Republican Party, because transgender youths are vilified by certain people. And they get them cranked up. They get them hating. Because, see, if you're going to run an authoritarian party, you have to have people to hate. Mm-hmm. You can't just disagree with them. You have to hate them. And listen, there are plenty of Democrats that hate Republicans, and a lot of Republicans hate Democrats. This is about children, not about politics, but they're making it about politics, and that's just wrong.
I got one question.
Yeah.
How can you hold a Bible in this hand and hatred in this hand?
Because they don't believe in what's in this hand.
Yeah. Well, they don't want to follow it. They want to follow it when it's convenient. And it's just, you're right. And that judge is right. There's no evidence. When you actually get down to the nuts and bolts of this, there's no evidence to support the idea that these decisions are being made on the fly, that these children are being harmed by what's going on here and not helped. That there is some callous movement to turn children into transgender kids. There's no evidence of this, and there is a ton of evidence that these things are helping struggling children.
And again, I don't think there's any parent in the world that said, boy, I hope when my girl or boy is born, they're transgender. I don't think they think that. I don't think that's on their mind.
And it's not a decision the child makes.
Right.
No, no. But these parents are trying their best to save their children. That's what they're doing.
That's it. That's it. And right now, for political purposes, they're trying to destroy the family unit and destroy the family.
And destroy the child.
And destroy the child, all for political gain. And if you believe in the Bible, I would bet you that's a sin to lie and to deceive, to get political points. But...
And the one I read, anyway.
Well, you got to open it up sometimes.
I just love to imagine what Jesus would do if confronted with a transgender child. How would he treat them?
Stone them, baby. No, I don't think so. Hey, I'm Josh. You wrote a remarkable piece about a remarkable guy, and that is Quentin Riggins, who has been elected the president of the Auburn Board of Trustees, a black man. This is the first time in the history of that university that this has occurred. And really, it's only 60 years after George Wallace stood in the door of the University of Alabama, refusing to let black people even enter.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something. You know, I've known Colin Q. I've known Q for a long, long time. Back into my sports days, he was kind enough in those days to come on the radio with me and do interviews. And I love the guy to death. He is one of the most genuine people that I have ever met in my life. I've laughed more with that guy than I think with anybody else. And you know, to know that he is Auburn's first black president of the board gives me a lot of pride in a school that I love and in a guy that I love. And it is, I told him, I said, you know, it may not be my place to say, but man, I'm so proud of you and to know what, you know, that you're this guy, because nobody loves Auburn more. Nobody has done more for Auburn over the years. And for, you know, the Black Student Union, for students all over, he's recruited there. He's helped numerous kids through their struggles and to get to graduation and to set an example. He's just really a remarkable guy, and I think a lot of us know him. And it really makes me happy to see a genuinely good guy ascend to such a level.
And if you haven't read that story, I encourage you to go read it. His story of his life is just amazing.
It is truly inspirational for everybody, old, young, black, white, whatever. It is just a great tale. And congratulations to Quentin Riggins on
congratulations, that man.
Election. All right, you've been watching The V, the voice of Alabama politics. You watch us because we watch them.